episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have Steve Montgomery, the author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. And together, we're examining the themes of apostasy in the New Apostolic Reformation and its history. Steve, it's good to be back, and I'm a little excited for today's episode. we were just talking before we started recording how it's tying in with some of the comments we've been getting, and I'm dumbfounded sometimes by the things that people say. And, you know, on the internet, it kind of hides you, makes you distant from the person. Sometimes when people are talking, they're saying things that they would never say if they're in front of a person's face, because you get that emotional connection. And, you know, if people were just to stop and think, well, no, that might hurt that person's feelings, and it's not going to do any good in the end. But, you know, that applies to religion, that applies to politics, that applies to pretty much everything we've been talking about. So very glad to get into this with you.
Yeah, me too, John. The recent comment that I noticed, and I thought it was interesting. It was a valid comment, but I didn't feel like I should probably get into it and answer directly. But really, I think the comment of the viewer was in relation to whether I was on the right side politically or on the left. And so this to me is an answer to that. I located a really good, allergies are coming up here in Texas. I found a really good article that deals with this topic. It's by Joshua Pauling. If you want to look at that later, I can send you a link to it. But he basically says the political has ascended to become eschatological. For the left, this is the only hope to usher in a better world. And then for the right, this is the last chance to prevent the world's destruction. So I thought about that, and I said that was pretty applicable to the topic. And then, like always, when we think in generalities or themes, somebody that's talking about this is not directly speaking about the NAR, but I see similarities because, as in the NAR and their predecessors in the Latter Rain movement, this sort of thing is an attempt for man to assume the role of God and redeem himself. That's a direct quote from Mr. Pauling. And Mr. Pauling also says, it attempts to replace the eschatological final judgment wrought by God with utopian visions wrought by humanity. And in his assessment, this is a problem to which anyone is susceptible when ultimate importance is ascribed to politics.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I've seen the comment that you're referring to, and I get those. There's a reason why when I do a podcast, I will say I'm not advocating for the Democrats or the Republicans because, you know, honestly, to be open and honest, I really think both parties ought to just be done away with and get some actual good people in there. I have a hard time believing this is the best that America can do. Are you serious?
I hear you.
But what happens is if you say anything that might challenge the beliefs of one side or the other, even if it's factual, just presenting facts, what happens is if the facts lay on the critical side of one side or the other, well, the other side's going to come in and say, well, you're taking the sides. And I take neither side. I really think that both sides should be just wiped out and let's get some good people in Washington. And it happens not only with politics, but religion. As you and I were discussing right before the show, I invite anybody who has escaped a cult to come in and talk on my podcast. And, you know, it's an open door. I have let people of beliefs that, you know, I'm not going to say which ones because I don't want to hurt their feelings, but they're so far from what I believe that I sometimes have to think they're living a life that is deeper fantasy than the one that they left. I'll just say it like that. So I'm not in alignment with many people who get on the podcast, but anytime, for example, today, the gentleman was talking about he had a struggle with homosexuality, which, you know, I've never had, many people that I know who have escaped these cults have had, and I feel a deep concern for them. You know, if they struggle, I would like to help them if I could. I can't. I'm not a minister. I'm not anything like this. And so my recommendation has always been, go find a pastor to help you. If you're wanting to remain Christian and you struggle with this, go find a pastor. And I just leave it at that. But what happens is, if I invite a guest on the show who has a struggle like this, well, then it is so polarized and politicized that you'll get people to attack that and say, well, you shouldn't have invited him on your show. You must be sympathetic to the homosexuals.
Well, my dad was a pastor, and one of the things that I really remember this phrase from him, and he was talking about interpreting scripture, but obviously it applies to any kind of logical discourse. He says, you can't argue from silence. And I think you know what that means, John, but easier way to say that is, if somebody directly says something, okay, well, then you can discuss that. You can think about there's a dialogue that can happen. But if somebody has not said something, you can't inject ideas or alternate facts or whatever you want to call them into that discourse, because then you have really nothing to stand on. And so I think I neglected to bring up something that is going to seem perhaps obscure to the folks that have seen these podcasts of ours. But I was thinking of a working title for this would be Vladimir Solovyov and the NAR. So Solovyov, I would expect people will not be aware of him, but hopefully after this broadcast, you would see a podcast, rather, you would see how he kind of ties into things. And he fits my overall premise of there's a converging apostasy coming from different angles. One, of course, is Christian identity. Another is just purely political. And then, of course, latter rain ideas, and even what you'd say like New Age kind of ideas from Alice Bailey. So that said, this already might sound like I'm stepping on somebody's toes, but here goes. I thought of the quest to make Russia great again. And so there's an interesting place that I found this idea coming up in. And that is in The Light Will Come from Russia by the NAR prophetess Gwen Shaw. Now, Gwen, if anybody has my book, you'll see that not only was she in good standing with all the NAR apostolic conferences and prophetic meetings, but she was highly influenced by esoteric thought and did some plagiarizing on her part. But Ms. Shaw tells us in this book that there will be new prophecies, and she makes this all mysterious, related to the role of Russia in the end times. Okay, that's interesting. You can actually hear that kind of stuff from people on the alt-right, say like Richard Spencer and even Steve Bannon to a certain extent. Here's another fact that talks about this revitalization of Russia. The blind Russian mystic Baba Vanga says, nobody can stop Russia. And she continues saying, for the glory of Russia, Vladimir Putin will become the Lord of the world. Okay, well, that's pretty high position for him, considering the kind of guy he seems to be. And so, one, the Russian mystic Vladimir Solovyov, he would have been writing in the mid-1800s to around 1900. Two, the Holocaust-denying John Lamb Lash, probably another new name for a lot of your listeners. And three, Alexander Dugin, who is an esoteric fascist and an advisor to Vladimir Putin. All of these people talk about ushering a new era in order to make Russia great again.
Yeah, and you mentioned the ties to the NAR, and I'm certain when people see that title, they're going to say, what in the world is this? But Solovyov was a propagandist, and as anybody who has seen the recent little short documentaries that have been putting out on the NAR, some of the things that they are spreading is propaganda. And I know that there's this big world of, you know, labeling people conspiracy theories if they talk about Russia influencing elections, especially if I mention the guy with the, you know, with the the big hair and the orange face. If I mention
know who
that,
you're talking about,
I'm not going to mention the name.
I don't get it.
But if you mention that there is a conspiracy happening, there are people who will reject that. But I'm an IT guy. I know how AI works. I have seen the AI. I get on Facebook. I can see it. People tell me that sometimes they'll share one of my videos and it'll get brought down because the AI will detect that it has elements that might be seen as offensive or whatever. And literally it's because I'm quoting these NAR guys or Branham, which is really ironic if you think about that. They're saying these things in churches. But it's more than a conspiracy theory. It is a proven conspiracy. I can see what's happening there. And Facebook's algorithm is to try to combat what's going on with Russia and China, where they're just dumping propaganda to try to sway public opinion. Well, while Russia and China are doing this with our heads and Facebook and these other social medias, they're doing the same thing in the churches with social medias. Maybe not in the same way or same strategy, but it is propaganda. And that history has been going on. If you watch the you know, the Christian Identity series that I'm doing with John McKinnon, you can go back in the 30s and you can see the same exact thing happening with Hitler. And back then they didn't have Facebook, but it's all coming in the newspapers, and there were propagandists that were spreading this thing. So the ties are unbelievable. If you, like you said, the converging apostasy, well, now you're converging apostasy also with propaganda. And, you know, that combination, to me, that is the essence of the NAR.
Yeah, John, that's interesting that you mentioned being taken down off of the internet for various things, just quoting people. Back when Twitter was Twitter, that's a long time ago, right? Us youngsters and us oldsters. Well, never mind. But when Twitter was still Twitter, I was quoting Bill Hammond, the supposed prophet of the NAR. And so Hammond was just saying these outlandish things about what I would call the sacred purge. And I just quote him, and it was evidently considered hate speech or something else. I say, yeah, it is hate speech, but he's the one saying it, not me. So, but here's something that gets back to the Russian aspect of things. And very interesting to me, because as in the Bible, you see wisdom is something you would ask of God. If you need wisdom, ask, and your Father would give you, your Father in heaven would give you this. Because, you know, if you ask for a loaf of bread, he's not going to give you a snake. So things like that you might hear, and of course I'm paraphrasing different aspects that I've heard in Scripture. But here's something that you don't hear too often, is that Sophia is a personal spiritual being. Jane Lee, who so greatly influenced the latter rain prophets, some of them, she referred to Sophia as the great goddess and the wonder of wonders. And she claimed that she got all of her revelations from Sophia. Okay, there's a reason for that in the esoteric world. And so here, let me just run down this as far as personal Sophia. Other than Vladimir Solovyov, so he does think of her as a personal actual being, those who consider Sophia to be a personal spiritual being include the Gnostic Valentinus, go figure, Jane Lead's mentor, the spiritualist, John Portage, Jane Lead herself, this is going to be a bit odd sounding, but the Satanic Church of Zazuzel, and five, the neo-Gnostic John Lamb Lash. So there's another one. John Portage, probably listeners are not too familiar with him, and probably especially John Lamb Lash, but talk about converging. He's sort of like Wesley Swift. He's got a little bit of everything. So here's what Mr. Lash says on the rise of Russia. And I have to warn again, this is going to get pretty weird. So he is a white supremacist. He's also a Luciferian. And he supports the rebirth of Russia. So he's not going to be going waving, the American flag. He's actually talking about Russia being the one for the end times. He says that these ideas have been revealed to him by Sophia. And get this, he refers to Sophia as the true Lucifer. It's a pretty odd idea there. And he says that she promotes Russia and America left and right, working together for an alliance of white power. And so my question might be this. Does this sound vaguely similar to anything said by politicians, generally speaking, in recent years? So what about Sophia and the Sacred Purge, according to Lash? He states that the planets and its people cannot go against Sophia without an annihilation in the timeline, is the way he puts it. So, similar to the final solution that we all know came from the Third Reich, Lash calls this a Sophiic correction. So he's kind of euphemizing the term final solution, get rid of Jews, all of his anti-Semitic stuff. excuse me. And so what makes this especially dangerous is that, like the hands-on eschatology of the Nar, which of course inherited from J. Lead and Lettering Prophets, Lash says that this annihilation will require human participation. So it's not going to be angels or Jesus or an earthquake is going to swallow them up. He says, no, humans are going to have to carry that out. And he says, we have met the time of this great purging. That's his words.
Yeah, and you can go back through history and you can see every single bad regime that has risen up, and even before it was political regimes, every bad religious movement that rose up, and they tie it to this esoteric knowledge. We have the knowledge, we have the secret, you guys don't. We're the ones who have the special power. And what it is a tool of manipulation, and in its essence, it is a tool of propaganda, much like the gentleman we're discussing. What's really ironic is that while they have that type of manipulation for whatever is their, premise that they're trying to put, their agenda they're trying to push, they also have manipulation on the words and phrases if it's a Christian, pseudo-Christian religion, such that, for example, I've thought about this long and hard. In the Latter Rain movement, they had this thing that was called discernment. Now, in the Bible, discernment means being able to discern. In other words, somebody comes to you and they give you this false propaganda like these movements are doing, and you discern, is it true or is it false? It is discernment. Well, they're pushing this false thing in this Latter Rain, right? So they began claiming that the word discernment actually meant the ability to detect people's personal information that they had written on their prayer cards when they came through the line. It is so absurd,
talking
man.
About there.
It is so absurd, man. And this, this got kind of widespread. And so you hear this word kind of randomly used, even in churches that haven't been a part of that Latter Rain history, because it was so widespread, they're using this word discernment and not really clearly understanding what it is. So there's propaganda on top of the propaganda.
So, more directly with this fella, Solovyov, Vladimir, his first name, he has a very long middle name, which I'm leaving out for purposes of not being able to pronounce it very well. But he said that, like a lot of our NAR folks, he claimed to be a prophet, and he said that his prophecies would soon come to pass. So he was an influential 19th century Russian philosopher who studied, go figure, lots of esoteric literature. So this included, again, the Gnostic Valentinus, Kabbalah, which is turned up again and again and again in the esoteric world. And he actually had access to Jane Leeds mentor's writings, and that is the spiritualist John Portage. So just as a reminder how this is tied into things more pertinent for today, several of the Latter Rain prophets borrowed heavily from Jane Leach's writings, and many of their ideas were then passed on to the NAR and also to what some people call Dominionist ideas and so on, because she talks the same, and she was back there in the 17th century writing this stuff, and then Latter Rain prophets plagiarized it and passed it on to folks that preach that stuff today. And so the question here is, so what? Well, I kind of already answered that, but another way to word it would be that Solovyov was in the family tradition of esoteric teachings that spawned two main things. One, they literally spawned the New Age movement, whatever people want to call that. I would call it Alice Bailey-influenced writings. And she used the word New Age constantly. So, and two, the Jane Lead-inspired doctrines that developed and progressed in the Lateran movement of 1948. So who does this Solovyov have in his corner? Who promotes him? Well, a lot of people do behind the scenes in Russia and elsewhere. But here's one. Pope John Paul II called Solovyov, quote, one of the greatest Russian Christian philosophers of the 19th and 20th centuries. And bringing it all down to today, Russian President Vladimir Putin, quote, assigned his regional governors with homework. Well, who might they be? One of the ones that they gave the most homework about, Putin wanted people to be familiar with the writings of Solovyov. Now, there's a lot that I'm not including here, but just a quick way of saying how that might come out is that people have quoted Solovyov's works and shown how they support Russian attacks on their satellites, and in particular the invasion of Ukraine, and stating things like we talked earlier, John, about dehumanizing language. They would say that the Ukrainians are not even humans, they're beasts that have decided that they can actually rise up and challenge Mother Russia, and so their demise is fitting.
Right, and the dehumanizing language really is what happens after you have the propaganda, because the propaganda is meant to manipulate your head, get you into an ideology, and then hypercharge that so that you can be aggressively against something, whereas you might not have been in the first place. And you know, back to the example we gave at the beginning of the show, a person who has some sort of struggle, I don't care what it is, alcoholism, in the case that I mentioned, I think it was homosexuality, but there are many different sins in the array of sins that humans can do. And that's part of being human. You struggle with things, you know, and what one person has a struggle with, the other person doesn't. Well, what happens is when you're in these movements and they use propaganda to make you hypersensitive against those things, it's interesting because you can see what is clearly the political agenda of the religion, because what is the current politics, what is the current sin in politics that they're focusing upon? That's the one they hypercharge you with, and that's the one that they come at you. And what happens is it dehumanizes you to the extent that the person who's struggling, you would rather attack them than to try to lift out a hand and help them back up. And it puts it into the place where your average person who has no inclination whatsoever to be a spiritual guider, to be a minister or evangelist or counselor or anything, instead you use the propaganda to supercharge their mind to attack. And that's literally what it's doing. And so these people, they attack the person with whatever is the current popular politicized sin, right? And it's so aggressive. And the problem with this is you can look at all of the villains in history that, you know, countries that have started world wars. We're talking about Putin right now, but before him, there were several others. They did the exact same thing, and they got the people to back them in their agenda to attack other people. And so the fact that they're doing this in religion, to me, it's scary. This is some scary stuff.
Yeah. And the part about Solovyov that I think is interesting and takes him out of the arena being completely obscure and therefore not really important to deal with is similar to Jane Lead. I've had people say, well, why focus on Jane Lead? And my answer is because much of what I call hands-on eschatology, meaning we will become perfect or we will become at least morally superior to others as part of the end time. And then ruling and reigning with Christ, well, we'll do that for Christ before a literal person, Christ, comes to receive the kingdom. And then, of course, the sacred purge aspect of that, because all of these things are being done on behalf of Christ before he returns. So that's where Solovyov actually has touched bases, if you want to put it, through other people in history onto the alt-right and some of the white supremacist ideas of today. And so here we go with those two supposedly obscure people, but still significant. I can say this, as far as Solovyov's Sophia, that's a mouthful for me, I can say this, like Jane Lead, Solovyov claimed to have mystical experiences with a personal Sophia, not just the idea of I want to be wise, full of Sophia. No, he was actually having visions, he said. And this may have been related to something, as you said, that he was struggling with, because his whole life was sort of obsessed with Sophia. And I think he either had a romantic interest or a wife of that name. So he said that Sophia was in one of his visions, he said that she was the perfect image of feminine beauty. Now, a scholar who's written about this, Dr. Oliver Smith, in his The Russian Bohem, says that Solovyov had deeply eroticized visions of Sophia. That is really easy to come by if you've been someone like him who studied Valentinus and Kabbalah, because they're full of that kind of stuff. And interestingly, that kind of stuff also gets passed on to Jane Lead. One of the only components that I've seen in Jane Lead that is not so much present in the latter reign is the feminine aspect of this this divine Sophia. They pretty much stick to Jesus, but they'll add in all of the other hands-on eschatology kind of ideas that Jane Lead did. Okay, so as far as the NAR goes, this stuff is similar to what the NAR prophet Bill Johnson's When Heaven Invades Earth says. According to Solovyov's The Reconciliation of Sophia, he says that she is called the rainbow, which is reconciling heaven and earth, where heaven stoops down to earth in divine reconciliation. So, yeah, if you've read Bill Johnson's book, this will probably click with you and you'll say, yeah, that sounds familiar.
You know, it's kind of funny because whenever I first left the religion and I was trying to just get footing, I mean, I wouldn't even say that I was on a path yet. I was just trying to get footing. And I was trying to understand what is this mess? What is this weird thing? Because we had the secret knowledge. And so you get in Google and you type in secret knowledge and you're going to find all kinds of things that, you know, I didn't know existed. And it led me straight to Gnosticism, which is the Gnosis, the secret knowledge, right? Well, what is interesting is there, each brand of this thing, whether it's Gnosticism or Kabbalah or any of the others, the Sophia character exists in a certain way, a certain form. And I began to compare all of these different esoteric religions with what I had grown up with. And I found out it's almost like a cookie cutter stamp religion, some of them Christianity, some of them not. And I got to the point of right before the healing revivals, before it became Latter Rain, there were numerous people that were claiming that they had some kind of secret knowledge, and it came to them in different various forms, which you could easily take whatever it is that they said and replace it with Sophia, and it's the same exact thing. And then, you know, about 1940s-ish, you had all of these men, not just William Branham, but many of them claiming that they had an angel come down and the angel gave them the secret knowledge. And therefore, I have the new revelation and you should be my cult member. So it was so common. Right. So many people doing it, right?
Yeah.
Well, and then Branham, I don't know, I don't think he originated it, but somebody came up with the idea that angels had to not be female. And so that began to spread through through the movement, and they took the female aspect out, which is exactly what you just said. It wasn't the female Sophia, but it was the same exact thing, just without gender. What's really interesting is when you come forward and you get into about the time of the Kansas City Prophets, you've got, you know, Paul Kane and Bob Jones and all these guys. Well, they took that same genderless angel that Branham claimed to have. I don't think he really saw anything. And they said it was a female angel named Emma. So then they brought the fullness of Sophia back into the NAR. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
So, yeah, as far as this angelic Sophia, you know, or is it male or female? Actually, in the writings of Jane Lead, she does something that goes all the way back to Valentinus, and kind of it's like have your cake and eat it too. She says that Sophia is genderless, but what she means is actually more accurately, she says that Sophia can express herself as male or female as she wishes. Well, if you look in Wicca or other places like that, you see that's a very common idea. And it's pretty much the idea of the androgynous original man. You know, you get into Plato and folks like that, and definitely in Valentinus, these male-female pairs in the heavenlies. If one of them is cast down, like Sophia was, this is pretty disgusting, but her consort, or she was the consort, apparently, in his ideas, of Christ. And so she got kicked out of heaven for wanting to know what it was like to be God. And, of course, if we read in the book of Genesis, there's a lot of implications behind that. So she gets kicked out. Okay. Her new role, as far as esoteric world goes, is to enlighten people with the gnosis of their divine heritage and their divine realignment or infusion or union with the angel that they had to lead. If you get into some of the apostles of the Latter Rain at the beginning, like George Houghton was one who said he gave the male gender to the body of Christ. He didn't say the bride of Christ. He said, no, we are the sons of God. And the New Jerusalem that comes down upon us, that's the feminine part. So it gets real twisted around, and it's like this and it's that, like you said, the Emma thing. Okay, so what about Soloviov, Sophia, and Lucifer? Okay, here's this warning again. It's about to get pretty weird. Well, this guy, Dr. Stefan A. Holler, says that Soloviov's writings were often invocations to Sophia, and they were dilated, he says, with Gnostic and Kabbalistic terminology and metaphors. For example, Soloviov's Song of the Ophites, and maybe you know what that means, John, it was written in honor of Sophia, who he referred to as the serpent of wisdom in the Garden of Eden. Interesting. Now, if you get into the esoteric world, that's the flip side. Everything in the Bible gets reversed. The serpent representing Satan or Lucifer turns out to be the good guy, the guy that gives illumination and freedom from the suppressive Jehovah and the Jews, all those guys are no good, so come with us. So Valentinians, who were also the ones that influenced Solovyov, taught that Sophia herself was the serpent. If you get into Blavatsky and some of the other occultists, you can see, that fits pretty well. Because Blavatsky calls Valentinus a saint. So go figure. Valentinians also said that this Lucifer-like Sophia is, and this is where it gets very weird, Prunikos. I think that's Latin or Greek, but yeah, it looks like Greek. I've never heard it pronounced, but it literally means, and if you're talking about somebody who in the occult world is, you know, like Lucifer slash Sophia, Prunikos literally means, quote, the sacred whore. Okay, and then similar to Jane Lead-inspired Manifest Sons of God teachings, Solovyov prays to Sophia, incarnate yourself in us and restore the fullness of the ages, that God may be all in all.
I'm glad you brought up the Garden of Eden, because, and the funny thing, you and I tend to beat each other to topics. You beat me too at that time. But, you know, when I began doing this and I began explaining to people that a lot of what we grew up with was religious propaganda, it was hard to put that into words, mm-hmm. because people, that term propaganda has just been so overused that people associate it with things that aren't even propaganda. But the way propaganda works in the religious form is they like to take these passages from the Bible that are very obscure, very, you know, don't have a lot of details. And what happens is they will spread the propaganda to give you the details to fill in the blanks in between. And that's the esoteric knowledge. That is what would come from Sophia, right? And so what happens is the people get assimilated into these belief sets through propaganda, so much so that they will take a passage that has no details, but it's very vague, very sometimes prophetic, sometimes just literally there are no details, such as the Garden of Eden. And they'll say, what's black and white? Can't you see X, Y, and Z that isn't even in the text? And the example that I was going to go to for that was, you know, William Branham's serpent seed. We've mentioned it, the two-seed doctrine of Christian identity. John McKinnon and I talk about it quite a bit. Well, if you talk to somebody who has been manipulated with that racist, anti-Semitic propaganda, and I've had them tell me this, can't you see it's black and white? The serpent had sex with Eve. But there is no text that says the serpent had sex with Eve. That's the result of propaganda. You have the propagandists who are giving you the false information, and they're saying, fill in the blanks, can't you see? And they hypercharge you to the extent that, you know, it's kind of funny. After I escaped this thing, I look back at some of these things that we believed, and they're unimportant. You know, whether the serpent did or didn't actually, in the context of just that passage, it's really unimportant. But we were manipulated to think that it was important, much like the propagandists. So we were in essence, our minds were, you know, just literally hijacked by some of the propaganda. And the fruits of that, as you know, with Christian identity, turned into some very dangerous things in the 60s.
Yeah, and John, you sound like you're, you sound like you're kind of alluding back to this idea that I was saying my dad taught me. About it's a bad idea to argue from silence. The silence there would be a full explication of one of these sort of vague scriptures. It's a real problem when people try to fill in those gaps. And technically, I think probably the best thing is to leave them alone if you can't come up with a literal, plain-to-see interpretation of it, then just leave it alone and don't follow what people are saying. So one of the points in relation to that arguing from silence, from vague scriptures, comes with one of the big ones that all these guys, or most of them, talk about is the manifestations of the sons of the manifestation of the sons of God. So Solovyov actually was another one who was really intrigued with that statement from the Bible, and he related it just like Jane Lead to becoming, quote, perfect. So you see this kind of thinking in the Nara too, to a certain extent, especially with the older prophets that had more access to the an influence from the latter rain. So Solovyov was studying the eighth chapter of Romans, and that's where this phrase comes from. And he said this helped him to develop his desire for immortality and for the glory of the sons of God. Well, he could easily sound like a Lateran prophet, you know, even though he's this Russian mystic. And so again, as Dr. Stefan A. Holder says, that all of Solovyov's writings about perfection are both theosophic and theurgic. So I came across that word, you know, we read, we learn. I haven't heard it too much, but I think it's easily defined as calling down spirits, even asking them to, well, calling them down for information because they're, you know, in the heavenlies and they know more about stuff than we do, or even asking them to channel through your body to give prophecy or to inhabit your body permanently as a matter of perfection. The latter part there would fit Jane Lead and Valentinus quite well. So what is this theurgy? Well, we can go to one of the horse's mouths here. The Satanist Helena Blavatsky of the Theosophical Society defined theurgy as, quote, a communication with and a means of bringing down to earth planetary spirits and angels who are the gods of light. I mean, that sounds like it's coming straight out of Jane Lead's mouth, especially if you've read this kind of stuff from my book, quoting Jane Lead. But here's where it gets a little bit interesting, or more interesting. How does this idea of calling down spirits compare with NAR prophet Bill Hammond when he calls down angels to, quote, appoint themselves companions with Christians? I just have to leave it at that. I think it compares pretty well. And so here's something else that you can see parallels with the NAR. Solovyov and unity. On the topic of unity, he says that there will be a global unification of the church and a theocracy, which will be ruled by a Russian czar. Of course, think like in his day, they had Russian czars. And a universal church with a pope and the prophet. He's pretty vague about what he means by the prophet. I don't know, folks. Read your Bible and see how that will compare to things you might hear in the book of Revelation. So, speaking of Revelation, in 1900, Solovyov wrote a short story of Antichrist. And it sounds oddly similar to what the NAR prophetess, Sandy Jacobs, says. I mean, generally speaking. So for Solovyov, he says that genuine believers, where have we heard that lately, from Catholicism, Russian Orthodoxy, and Evangelical Protestantism will all come together in unity in the 21st century. Okay, so talking about the great end time revival, of course, some people would say, no, the Bible really doesn't say that. The billion person harvest and all that. There's plenty of scriptures that would oppose that and say directly the opposite. Where here you have Solovyov agreeing with the NAR prophets and saying that, yeah, all these guys are going to get together. And there's actually some direct quotes from Cindy Jacobs that talks about there must be complete unity among believers. And that's where you see some of the ideas of having this big tent kind of philosophy of saying, okay, well, you're Catholic, but are you on with what we're doing? Yeah, you're a non-charismatic. Maybe you're a Methodist, but hey, we need to set up the kingdom of God. Are you with us? And so, yeah, it does sound like NAR teaching to me. But in the same story, a short story of the Antichrist, Solovyov says that there will be an imposter. Okay, go figure. But he says that later, people that support him will become pleased with killing and silencing those who oppose this diabolical tyrant. They will even hold festivities to execute them for God.
You know, and it's kind of weird and almost like a fantasy movie to the way the NAR developed over time. I'm sure you're familiar with this, but I'm finding not everybody, even in the NAR, is aware of this history. But when C. Peter Wagner started putting a name on what was emerging, he started claiming that there were different regions of the earth that were ruled by these elemental spirits. And so need to establish this network, and the network became the NAR, but this network of Christians who may not even believe the same things, but in the network they can provide prayer warriors to go fight the spirits. And this guy named Ted Haggard started claiming that there was this queen of heaven that he was trying to battle it with his spiritual warriors. And what was her name? It was Anna Mendez, I think it was, called a group of several people, and they went up into the Himalayas to call down this elemental spirit from heaven and fight it. And you can imagine how silly that would have looked, all these people. But what they're trying to, you know, and it's all, for me, it's all fantasy. None of this is even any reality to it. But if it were real, what they're essentially trying to do is call down the bad spirits, not the good ones. Exactly. So the whole thing is just so absurd.
It does. John, it reminds me of one. What's a company that has the all the really popular superhero movies?
Marvel.
Marvel. It sounds like one of those kind of things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, here's something that when I mentioned this, this word, people thought, no, you really mean something else. So Solovyov, he had a very big influence on Russian cosmism. And people think, are you trying to say communism? Said no, cosmism, speaking of the cosmos. So the first question that comes up is, what is cosmism? Well, from the things that I read about it, cosmism tried to synthesize Gnostic beliefs with scientific progress. Okay, so that's a big one of those convergences. And from anybody from Jane Lee, Roel Cronquist, even Helena Blavatsky, they all talk about these vague kind of ideas that the science and spirituality will merge, and that this will somehow lead to either the new age or immortality or heightened psychic abilities, however they want to phrase it. And so cosmism, this is kind of a dark and dirty aspect of it, I would say. It seeks an alliance between Germany and Russia, since both share common roots in the peoples of Aryan origin. Okay, so there you go with something that really can tie into the guys in alt-right Christian identity. And some of the more so-called intellectuals of that movement, like Dugin, Alexander Dugin, they do draw upon these histories. And Dugin, being a Russian, he's familiar with Valentinus and Sophia and Plato and some of these other ideas about cosmism. And so, and it just goes, it's logical to show the next part here is that cosmism shares some of Lee's sources of inspiration. And remember, what she gets handed down to the latter rain, at least a lot of it. So, for example, cosmism includes the so-called classic occultist traditions, such as Kabbalah, astrology, alchemy, etc. Okay. So, and like Valentinus and Jane Lee, the cosmist, here we go, this is a big one, Fyodorov, I think I got it, said that perfection is possible through union with immortal beings. That probably sounds to you like Jim Jones and Branham. To me, it sounds like also like Jane Lee. Because they're all in the same big happy family, even though they alter these words. As you say, John, the little levers they pull at and the strings they pull for their propagandist presentations of all this stuff, they really cross ties and come together in certain respects. I have a theory about that, which you probably wouldn't relate to too much, John. But it's totally ahistorical. I know you're very good with historical research. In my idea, certain forms of deception are ahistorical, and they just essentially follow a line to denigrate Christ, to pull people away from Christianity. But those ideas exist out there and don't necessarily have to have so-and-so said this to so-and-so and whatever. So I'm sure we can have a nice discussion about that sometime, John. Okay, but here's something that does tie all this cosmic stuff back to current day NAR folks. So similar to the elitism of the NAR and the Third Reich and the Indian nationalists that we discussed last time, cosmos believed that the transformation of man into Superman will come through authoritarianism and physical violence.
You know, you mentioned the Marvel comics, and it's hard not to apply that example to this whole thing, because you've got the Christian identity in the United States, you've got the Russian thing, you've got the Indian thing, and you know, it's like the Marvel universe, but then because of all of these networks, you've got the Marvel universe, and then you've got the DC universe for the DC comics, and I don't know, maybe Alley-Oop from the Funny Papers. It's all of these different networks. And then within the NAR, because they're tied to the right-wing pseudo-Christian politic thing. Well, within their network, you've got all of the different versions and variations from there, most of which aren't in full cohesion. So sometimes they'll be completely polar opposite in doctrines. But as long as they're part of the network, and as long as we're joining to fight this imaginary queen of heaven or whatever is the weird thing they're fighting at the time, as long as you're part of that network, you're okay, and we'll see you as a good people and anybody who opposes us as a villain. We have seeded that propaganda, and now, I mean, think of this. It has reached the level where even Christians in the United States are vilified, because the other Christians who are part of this network, they see the not the same flavor of Christianity as the villain because of the propaganda. Mm.
Yeah, this is very unfortunate, and we both see it so much. I'm really thankful for the times. I know you feel this way too, John. Other than people who maybe misunderstand what you're doing, and you know, try to downgrade whatever your point of view is, you have these folks that are sincere. They're hurting. They've gone through some form of deception. They're trying to get out of it. And they say, thank you so much, John. Thank you so much, Steve, for bringing these things to light. It's helping me to get out of what I'm doing. It's helped me unravel some of that stuff. I know, John, you talked about the years that it took you to unravel and kind of get back to the just base of who you are as a person and what do you think about the Bible, about Christ. For me, when I left the Positive Confession Word of Faith group that I was in, it took a long time. And even when I did go back and read the Bible, all that loaded language would come back. And I think one of the terms I heard in those days was floating. So floating would be like you're kind of back in the mindset of the group and wondering, okay, well, the Bible does say that, but what does it really mean? And so, I think, what do they call that? Cognitive dissonance. I think that that's a big problem for people that come out of these groups. And I'm just glad that we can put in our 2 cents worth and help folks out.
Yeah, I'm glad too. And, you know, having gone through it, it's easier for me than some of the people who haven't. But just to put it into proper perspective, somebody who has had their identity stolen from them, that was me, that's many of the people I work with. Well, there comes a point when you have to deconstruct that. And some of the things that people argue as sin or not sin, well, there's a point of time in your deconstruction that you really just simply don't care, because you have deconstructed all of that. You have nothing. You've wiped your complete, every bit of your foundation is gone. And you're trying to stack back up. What is my foundation? Who am I? What do I believe? So my parents were Christian. Why am I Christian? Why do I want to be Christian? And you have to allow that progression, because if you try to push somebody one way or another, you may actually push them away from where you're wanting them to head, because you're not doing the right thing. I'll just say it like that. Even the psychologists will tell you, don't proselytize people when you want to help them. Instead, show them the way, right? So that's what we try to do here. Everybody's welcome, and I'm glad we can talk through these things. And it's just, for me, it gets more and more fascinating the further you and I go into the converging apostasy, because every single aspect of what we talk about on this show, my mind is racing through all of these doctrines and how it applies. And I know that all of our listeners are the same way. That's why this is one of the more popular ones that I do. So thank you so much for doing this with me, Steve.
Glad to be a part of it, John.
Well, if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more information about the dark side of Latter Rain, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. For more about the Converging Apostasy, you can read the book The Converging Apostasy, and you can also read the book A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency.